podcast this week, we come face to face with Maxine, but thankfully not Pearl. Oh, you do not want to come face to face with Pearl, the star of Maxine 3X's Mia Goth. Plus, the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast that is not going to mention politics today. We're not going to mention politics, even though we're recording at the time of the general election, folks. We're not going to do it. Not going to mention politics in any way. You may call us conservative, but I don't want to labor the point. Remember, no politics. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the Empire Podcast. I'm joined this week in the studio by my two colleagues of such lethal cunning. We're up against it a little bit time-wise this week because we've all got a vote.
I've already done
it. Voted this morning, Chris.
Oh, well, there you go. We're all
democracy
good.
Democracy in action.
In that case, I don't see any reason, James Dyer, why we can't just have a nice, leisurely four-hour podcast.
Don't make me destroy you.
Why can we not have a four-hour
podcast? We
are a
little bit stacked in the pod booth this week because Chris, frankly, is starting late for reasons.
What the fuck?
Hey, you pushed us back by half an hour. So, you know, you've slid the schedule back in time.
Why did I push us back by half an hour, James
Dyer? Hard to say, because you weren't done.
Griffin Dunn.
That's right.
Griffin Dunn was in this chair, occupied currently by our geek queen, Helen O'Hara. Hello, Helen. Welcome back.
I'm going to have to ask you to talk to me through my stylist now that I'm a Vogue star.
Oh,
thanks.
My God. Helen goes to Glastonbury for 1 week. Unbelievable. Off her face on Q's and A's. Griffin Dunn was in that chair.
Wow.
Where you were just seconds before.
Amazing.
It's quite incredible. He'll be on next week's show talking about his memoir, The Friday Afternoon Club, a family memoir, which is cracking.
When he walked into the studio, did you just turn slowly and look at him and just stare and not say anything?
You made me miss.
You were a Northern Irish twat in London.
Yes, and I have been the less successful sequel. Actually, sounds better than American Werewolf in Paris, in fairness. Anyway, very, very quick, because we do have a listener question to get to. Hell's Bells was in Glastonbury, rubbing shoulders with the A-listers.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you speak to in the Pilton Palais?
So many people. Cate Blanchett, Tilda Swinton.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Isn't it? I don't know.
Blanchett.
Blanchett, if you want. I don't know.
Yeah, that feels better.
Okay. Well, like spinach, you Blanchett. Florence Pugh, Paul Mescal, Andrew Scott.
Did she die in a hail of bullets?
Yes, she did. Okay. Well,
hail of questions.
She had a good run. did I say Tilda Swinton? I think I did. The Unicorns crew, we'll be talking about that later. Problemista director, Julio Torres, who was very nice. Simon and Edgar. Simon Pegg and Edgar
Simon
Wright.
Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright, for people who don't know, Helen. Jesus.
Well, they were celebrating the 20th anniversary of Shaun of the Dead, if you want to feel really old. Obviously, I don't, because that means I was about nine.
You must
when
have been in school
out.
When it came out.
Pretty
yeah.
much, yeah. yeah. Anyway, so yeah, it was really, really lovely. I mean, they were all lovely. Everything went very well, except when I tried to make small talk by asking what bands they were going to see. And they would then just reel off a series of syllables that literally meant nothing. You know, I just, like, you know, I didn't expect to know the in-depth back catalogue of all these bands, but, like, I thought I'd know some names. But no, the cool kids are going to see bands I've literally never heard of. And what's worse...
Lib Dems, DUP.
The DUP. But what's worse is that then, like...
Sorry, no politics.
Then, like, Simon and Edgar came
Simon
around.
Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright.
Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright
Jesus.
Came along, and I would ask them the same questions. And then they did have the same answers as the cool young people.
Well, that's because they're very
switched in.
They're
and
plugged in.
Switched on, plugged in, and it made me feel worse about myself. But then I was in Vogue, so that amused me.
What? You were in on Vogue?
Free your mind! I believe in
the rest will follow.
The rest will follow.
Be colorblind.
Don't be so shallow. Got my finger on the pulse of popular music.
What was that, 25 years old now?
Oh, well, that's way more than 25 years old, I'm guessing.
Wow. Yeah, it is.
But obviously, I only heard it recently on some sort of nostalgia pop
Probably.
Station.
Yeah, you were a mere child 25 years ago.
A youngling. Master Skywalker. Tight show. Did you see Coldplay?
I did see Coldplay because I'll be honest, Simon Pegg had said there was going to be a Hollywood legend.
Oh, Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
We just call him Simon.
Okay. And so I went along kind of for that reason. And look, they put on a good show, but I'm not sure I'm, you know, that big a fan. But I did see Janelle Monáe, and she was freaking incredible. So I saw went to see Russell Crowe's band.
Yes.
30-odd foot of grunt.
No, he's got a different
band. Oh, does he?
Now. Yeah. Different band.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. And I stayed for as many songs as I could.
The whole
set. How was
set?
It, the song?
The song.
Take I it mean, up with his boss, you the
think,
Pope.
You think you're joking, but yes.
So he has joined a band worse than 30-odd foot of grunt.
I think he's set up a band. Look, it's his band.
He hasn't joined a band. It's not like you put an advert in the paper for a guitarist and Russell Crowe turns
that's
up.
That's what happens.
Yeah, I think he very much set up the band. Look, I admire him for getting up on stage and singing. I admire his obvious sincerity in the lyrics and, you know, the self-expression he puts into the songs. But I did not 100% admire the songs themselves, nor his singing ability.
Was it like death metal? So he was actually like reenacting scenes from The Exorcism.
He was in the acoustic tent.
Helen, were you not entertained?
I mean, you know, I've been more entertained by most other things he's done. That's all I'm saying. But like,
even Proof of Life.
Okay. Well, I mean, maybe not. It was on Proof of Life levels, is what I'm saying.
So you feel resentful that you're not getting this time back, and you will have your vengeance in this life or the next.
Well, I mean, Paul Mescal was in the film Enclosure with us.
Oh my God, Gladiator. And Gladiator 2.
Yeah,
remember
know.
That for later on. We'll be talking in the movie news section. But first of all, time for a listener question. Now, today is a general election. Today, the nation is voting for the next prime minister. Who could it be? My word, we're on tenterhooks, but no politics. Anyway, the question has come from a whole bunch of people, and I've molded it in my own inimitable fashion. Lots of people asking about terrible movie politicians and corrupt movie politicians. I have no idea why. And that's fucking Mount Rushmore. So the Mount Rushmore of terrible or just movie politicians.
Terrible movies.
But with the emphasis on terrible or corrupt.
Okay, because we don't want to put the American president of the American president on the same, you know,
Andrew
Mount
Shepherd.
Rushmore. Yeah, but we don't want to put him on the same Mount Rushmore as like the Mancunian candidate, do we?
The Mancunian? Mancunian candidate. Or there's a Mancunian candidate, which is slightly different. but yeah. All right. So who are you choosing?
Who are you voting for? Ones?
I can't tell you that.
No, on the Mount Rushmore, you have to cast your votes.
All right. Okay. Well, how do you want to define politician, right?
Well, a politician would be my suggestion. Sorry if that was ambiguous. but how, you know, are we picking specifically? I mean, because obviously Sheev Palpatine would be my desired leader.
Good Lord. But,
because he is so authoritative and influential. He has gravitas.
Don't you think that Thanos is something of a politician? Don't you think so?
Not really.
No.
I don't see him as being one for politics. Although, you know, he does believe the electorate should be perfectly balanced, as all things should be. He's a centrist, you see.
Dread it. Run from it. Nigel Farage arrives all the same.
Good God.
No politics.
I might vote for Bulworth, Senator Bulworth.
He's not corrupt.
No, he's not corrupt. I'm not saying corrupt, although the man has a natural.
He's the opposite of corrupt.
Hip-hop. yes.
If anything, he is too honest.
He is too honest.
Although I love politicians.
Because he hasn't slept, but he's very tired. And I empathize with that.
I would love modern-day politicians, naming no names, to be as honest and candid with their answers as Bulworth is in the film Bulworth.
Yes.
Warren Beatty, if you don't know that film, he's a politician who is just sick of all the bullshit. And then decides to A, take out a hit on his own life, and B, kind of come clean.
Yeah.
And he loves his new lease of life, and then but and tries it to reverse the
it's
hit.
It's all because he's sleep deprived, massively sleep deprived.
Doesn't he also fall in love with Halle Berry?
He does.
I mean,
yeah.
We can all relate.
I mean, that's
can't
fair.
We?
I mean, honestly, even I can relate to that one. So, are we ruling out real figures? So, no Lincoln, no Gandhi.
Hang on, what? Are we doing corrupt movie politicians?
No,
Gandhi was proper
I'm
shifty.
That was my first question, was are
the
we really...
famously
on...
shifty Gandhi.
Well, because he just said a good,
I know,
pretty
but,
good politician.
True. But you know what he's like? He never listens to the question. He just...
I know, but that's why
he's
I'm
like a politician.
Trying to define the terms.
Oh, hang
I'm
on
not
a second.
Like a politician.
This is like the general election in microcosm.
Helen believes in Harvey Dent. I think we can all agree with that.
Harvey Dent.
I don't particularly like...
would
I
you just... go... Okay, corrupt politicians.
So it's corrupt.
Corrupt or terrible
corrupt
politicians.
Or terrible.
Yes.
And it's not real life. No real life.
No real life.
Okay, fine.
Except, I mean, Nixon, right? I mean...
Well, I don't know. Like, I feel like if we're ruling... We kind of have to rule out Nixon, otherwise it isn't fair.
You could have four Nixons, right? Because Nixon has been played loads on
so
screen.
So many times.
You know, Dan Hedaya in Dick.
Can I include Tracy Flick? if we're going
for the
elections. A literal election.
The Alexander Payne film. Played by Reese Witherspoon, of course. I think she's a good shot as a
good bad politician.
She's a good bad politician. She's a very bad politician. But
and she will go on to be a terrible politician.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But a good politician for her.
Yeah.
And she'll be lining her own pockets.
Exactly.
Yeah. No politics.
So that's my answer.
Yeah. One of your answers.
Wait, I have more.
Well, because we have to come up one each, as is the time honored tradition of this relatively new segment, and we have to come up with one each, and then we have to decide one communal shitty politician.
Fine.
Jimbo, are you going for Shiv Palpatine?
Bulworth, I guess, isn't a shitty politician because he's actually quite good. So I guess I have to go with Shiv. My beloved Sheev.
Sheev.
My beloved Sheev said literally no one ever.
I should be watching you with great interest.
Somehow Palpatine returned to the ballot box.
That's right.
Put an X by that motherfucker's name. That's for sure. All right, Sheev Palpatine. And I've forgotten yours already. Tracy Flick.
Wow, Tracy Flick.
Vote for Flick. I'm going to go for the mayor from Jaws.
Matthew Vaughn.
I'm going to go for Matthew Vaughn from Jaws.
To be clear, we're not calling Matthew Vaughn corrupt. Oh my God.
I believe his name is Larry.
Larry Matthew Vaughn. Yes.
What a day to be talking about Jaws. It's the 4th of July as we record this. And it's coming up on the weekend. It's basically Jaws time. I mean, if you're anywhere near Amity, look out.
Yeah. You yell shark. You got yourself a panic on the 4th of July.
Today we celebrate our Independence Day.
We do
celebrate. Bill Pullman will be on my Mount Rushmore of good movie politicians.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is a very, very good politician. In that, although we don't know what his policies are.
We have apart from killing aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But he's tough on aliens and tough on the causes of aliens.
Yeah, at least he doesn't build a wall to try and keep the aliens out.
No, he just blows up their ships.
I mean, he does kind of build a moon base to keep them out in the second one.
Yeah.
Is that him, though, or is that another politician?
That's true. It's someone else, isn't it?
But then we don't talk about the second one.
No.
The second one, no. But absolutely not.
We're leaning towards corruption rather than ineptitude, aren't we? Because if we are going for ineptitude, then, and if we're staying within the Star Wars universe, then Jar Jar is more inept than Sheev, because he destroys democracy with his own stupidity. So,
but not as a politician.
Yes, as a politician, because he's the one who introduces the emergency powers.
He does that.
Why do we have to stay at the Star Wars universe? I guess would be my question for
You've met James, right?
Yeah.
He's only seen these films.
We went to the Galactic Star Cruiser a couple of years ago, and we never left.
Oh no, we're still there.
It's like the end of the Descent. Spoiler for the Descent. We're still there.
God.
Except if you're watching the American cut after Descent, in which case they get out absolutely fine.
Totally
because
fine.
The ending is different.
Yeah, I prefer that cut, in fairness.
Do you?
Yeah, I like my heroes to live.
How about that, was it the vice president in the MCU who was
Miguel Ferrer in Iron Man 3.
I mean, while we're being parodies of ourselves.
I don't think he was being a ne'er-do-well for himself. It was shown that he had a son who had a disability, and he was doing it because he thought extremists could save his son.
He was nevertheless doing corruption.
Was he trying to kill his boss?
Yes.
Played by, of course?
Death.
Yes.
Played by Death. He was at a disadvantage trying to kill Death.
Yeah.
Exactly.
William Sadler. Yes. You cannot, in the MCU, as far as I know anyway, see the outline of William Sadler's testicles, which of course you can
in Die Hard 2.
Thanks so much for clarifying that one.
Yeah. Or indeed the Shawshank Redemption. You can't see his balls in Shawshank Redemption either. And believe me, I have paused.
I don't think we need to itemize every single film where can or cannot.
I'm like Mr. Skin, but just for one actor.
Oh boy.
It's just a website. Do we see William Sadler's, the outline of William Sadler's testicles in this movie? No. Moving on. Do we see the outline of William Sadler's testicles in this movie? No. Right, moving on. Click next page. Do we see the outline of William Sadler's testicles in this movie? Well, sit down. I've got some good news for you. Pull up a chair, because yes, you do. My word. Whoa, Colonel Stewart. Yeah. Hello.
Naked yoga.
Okay, so Matthew Vaughn from Jaws, Sheev Palpatine from which one? Which film?
Whichever you want. I think we'll stick with The Purity of the Phantom Menace.
But he's not corrupted at that point.
He's corrupt.
No, he's absolutely corrupt. Yeah.
I don't think Matthew Vaughn's corrupt in Jaws.
Larry
Matthew Vaughn. Yeah. I don't think he's corrupt in Jaws. I think he's just...
Inept.
He's inept, but also he's a good man. Well,
no, so disqualified then?
No, there is corruption there. There's
terrible
weakness in corruption. There's like, you know, he's kind of... He is so concerned with being shouted at by the town's traders that he thinks that's more important than saving lives.
You say that. He could just be in the pocket of Big Shark.
You say that. Big Shark. Big Fin. We have to decide one more terrible, corrupt movie politician. And I'm not accepting the vice president from Iron Man 3 because not even I could tell you what he's called.
Okay. Well, there's... Okay.
I can tell you what the president's called.
Does the Manchurian candidate count? Like, is it corruption if you've been brainwashed?
Angela Lansbury / Meryl Streep?
Yes.
Is she brainwashed? She's
Frank
part of
Sinatra
the...
Frank Sinatra / Liev Schreiber?
Hang on, you mean Frank Sinatra / Denzel?
Sorry, yes.
Liev Schreiber is the candidate who's trying to...
I mean Liev Schreiber.
You're talking about Liev Schreiber. You mean Lawrence Harvey.
Yes.
Lawrence Harvey.
Lawrence Harvey, not Frank Sinatra. Yes.
Yeah.
The brainwashy.
I don't know
if that's corruption.
He counts. I think she counts.
But she's not a politician.
Isn't she, though? I think she is in the remake. Isn't she? The Meryl Streep character is a politician.
Is she?
In the remake. Yeah.
Well, now we've come to the fact that I haven't rewatched the remake in a while.
All right. Okay.
Does Dave count?
Oh, again, this is Frank Langella. Is Frank Langella.
It could be, yes. But you could even argue Dave himself, because while he is a good dude, he is also fundamentally not the person who was actually elected to office and is fundamentally abusing power that does not belong to him.
I am not having that. I am not having Dave. However, he is the replacement for a terrible president.
That's true. So the original Kevin Kline, Roland Dave, you're saying?
Yes. Okay.
Okay, that could work.
What about someone like Mr. Potter?
Oh, he's not...
It's a Wonderful Life. Is he not a politician?
He's not technically, I think, a politician, is he? I don't think he's the
This is all very modern movie.
Yeah,
very,
how about like everyone in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington apart from Mr. Smith?
I think we've got it. So what's the one where it's Gene Hackman and it's Clint Eastwood? Is it Absolute Power or Murder 1600?
Absolute Power.
Okay, it's a generic 90s political thriller. But the one, because it's a kind of an unofficial Unforgiven reunion, so I quite like that one. I just don't remember what he's called.
He's called Mr. President. He's called President Matthew
Vaughn. President Hackman.
He's called President Kingsman Argyle.
Is he?
I don't know.
President Allen.
I don't know. I'm not accepting that. And neither am I accepting the incredibly vague everyone in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington except for Mr. Smith.
I think that's reasonable. President Alan Richmond.
Jesus Christ.
Rick Mann was already taken. Yeah. So.
Bob Roberts. Boom.
Isn't he a good guy?
No, he's absolutely fucking not a good guy. He's an arse. He's a twat. Some people might vote for him. Are we happy with Bob Roberts as our choice?
Because we think he's a very bad man, apparently. So
but that's a good thing.
Okay, then, yes.
Because that's what we're doing. Do you understand the question, Helen? Helen's been so burned by doing the Q's, she can't do the A's.
I'm just saying I'm not happy with him, you know, in the sense of, like, I don't...
You won't vote for him.
We're up against the time-wise, so I'm saying... Fine. Okay.
Fine.
Bob Roberts?
Sure.
Bob Roberts, Tracy Flick, Matthew Vaughn, and...
Sheev.
Done.
Terrible
Boom.
People.
I'd vote for all four of those. I'll be honest with you.
That's just the worst coalition imaginable, isn't it?
I don't know. I can imagine pretty worse.
I don't even feel like it's the worst coalition of the last 14 years.
Wow.
Hey,
wow.
No politics, Helen.
No politics.
If you want to have your question read out in the Emperor podcast, and why the hell wouldn't you? You can get in touch with me on Twitter. I've been thinking about moving around the platforms. I've been thinking about doing a thing where I have the question from Twitter 1 week.
Uh-huh.
And this is basically just to boost my numbers on Blue Sky and Threads.
You shocked me.
The next week, it's a Threads question. Then the next week, it's a Blue Sky question. Then the next... Screw Facebook. And then the next week after that, we said we would take questions from the subreddit page that terrifies us all. And then back to Twitter. So why don't we do Twitter next week?
Sure.
And then I will try to do Threads and Blue Sky after that. Mm. And then I'll forget about it. And then we'll go back to
Twitter. Blue sky thinking, Chris.
That is some blue sky thinking. All right, should we get straight into movie news?
Yeah.
And there's really only one place we can start because I haven't been paying attention to what's been happening. And the only thing I know about is that there was a trailer. Is there a trailer? Will be a trailer. There was. I'll be honest, I have read it, but I saw some pretty pictures of Paul Mescal, Pedro Pascal, Denzel Washington, and Joseph Quinn in Gladiator 2. What do we think? I mean, the trailer's
well,
out next week,
not a trailer.
Right?
No, the trailer is coming. So the trailer will coming. Be next week. Okay. We've just seen some pictures. I've seen Paul Mescal's character. We have seen all the people that you mentioned. And it looks very gladiator-y. I was entertained.
I also was entertained, yeah. Yeah.
Better than a Russell Crowe gig.
Better than a Russell Crowe gig.
Left after one picture.
Paul Mescal has already kind of slightly debulked from the point he was in the pictures, just FYI.
He doesn't look that bulked up in those pictures.
Really? I mean,
I wouldn't fight him.
Yeah.
No, I definitely.
He's Robbie Collin.
He's a lovely man. Like he's, you know.
Let's be honest.
He's no Manny Jacinto, but it was a good week for arms. That's all I'm saying.
It was a very good week for arms, and this week it was nearly a good week for arse.
Yeah.
You know. You haven't seen this week's episode?
Oh yes, I saw this week's episode.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Sun's out, buns out.
But no spoilers for that. If you want that, you'll have to go to the spoiler feed and look up the Acolyte.
I wouldn't recommend.
No, I really wouldn't. This is a bold new strategy where we just advise you not to subscribe to the Spoiler Special podcast because you really do not want to listen to us talk about Manny Jacinto's bottom.
It was very sexually charged.
It was
very sexually charged. But I would recommend subscribing to the Spoiler Special feed because there's loads of other great stuff in there. There's stuff in there that's actually great,
cool.
And not just James and I having a sort of identity crisis.
Not all of it is bum oriented.
So anyway, the pictures look cool. There are also many pictures. The pictures.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yes. I've forgotten all about that.
And you know, there are also lots of pictures and lots of very cool drops this week from the new issue of Empire, which is out today
That's
as we
right.
speak.
That's right, Helen. My word.
On brand.
Look at that. She goes. Do you go to Glastonbury and like get a lesson in segues?
I've always been this good at segues.
But the new issue of Empire has a transforming lenticular color of Morfydd Clark, and it morphs, so we have a morphing Morfydd.
Try saying that three times fast.
Right.
I mean, I think you fucked it up the first time. So.
I think you said we had a lenticular color.
Yeah, you did.
A lenticular color. Well,
technically, I guess it is
a lenticular color. It just happens to be a cover.
We have two of them, in fact.
We do, yes. The other one is Charlie Vickers, but that doesn't rhyme with morphing, so I'm less interested.
Right.
So this is the brand new issue of Empire. We're plugging it early.
We are.
And it is on sale right now in all good, evil, and virtual newsagents. And on the cover is the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, season two, the Prime Video, hugely ambitious, hugely expensive Lord of the Rings TV show, which is coming back for season two. And on the cover is indeed Galadriel herself, formerly played by Clayte Blanchett.
I'm sorry, she likes to be called Helen's good friend.
Damn it, I hate when I pull you up on fucking up in a sentence, then I immediately fuck up in the next sentence, and I've got to keep it in, you motherfucker. Yes, Helen's good friend, Clayte Blanchett, played Galadriel, but now it is Morfydd Clark, who's from Wales.
Yeah, she's fab. Love her. I really like this show as well. I thought the season one started a little bit slow, but by the end I was like,
Helen, you didn't sour on it.
Quite the opposite. Oh.
Wow.
Because the other cover is Charlie Vickers as Sauron.
Yeah, so spoilers there for season one.
Yeah, he's Sauron.
He's Sauron.
We think he's not, and then he is.
No, it's clever. Yeah. I thought it was really fun, so I'm super hyped for this new one. And there are Barrow Wrights as well, if you're one of
Barrow Whites.
Barrow Whites, sorry.
Oh, well, we're all fucking up today.
They are Barrow Wrights, but they're also Barrow Whites.
Barrow Whites should have rights.
They do have rights. Rights for Barrow Whites.
If you vote for me, I will make sure that your Barrow Whites have rights.
What rights would those be, Chris?
Equal rights,
just
Helen.
The rights to have
what?
to white barrows.
No, but they no rights R-I-T-E-S because they're ghosts, so they'd be rights.
All right. So you're saying the whites W-I-G-H-T.
The whites have rights
have
to rights.
R-I-T-E.
Yes.
To okay.
They have a right to rights.
They have a right to R-I-T-E-S.
I have no idea what's going on.
The W-I-G-H-T-S have an R-I-G-H-T to R-I-T-E.
H.
Oh, God. I don't know what's happened.
Okay, so there's loads of other great stuff inside The Issue, as Chris Evans famously once said. We have features on M. Night Shyamalan's Trap, which is a film I'm so looking forward to.
Did you see the new trailer this week? Looks even better than the first one.
I don't want to give any more away,
but it was
good. They had me with Silence of the Lambs at a Taylor Swift concert. So.
Well, obviously they had you with that. Obviously.
We have a feature on Eli Roth's Borderlands featuring, oh my God, Helen's good friend, Clayt Banchett.
That's me.
And we have a feature on The Crow. No, not that one, the new one, in which we talk to Rupert Sanders, Bill Skarsgård, FKA Twigs, and Danny Houston. Gee, I wonder who the bad guy is. We also have a feature on The Last Starfighter. And we have, there's no way easy way to say this. Hundreds of beavers in Empire magazine this month. No, we haven't turned into one of Lowe's magazines.
I was about to say, those pages I thought we got rid of about 20 years ago.
They're stuck together. So, Hundreds of Beavers is a very high-concept, imaginative, silent comedy about a man who is beset by hundreds of actual beavers. So it's not like, you know,
slang for lady bits.
Lady bits.
Thank you.
So that's exciting. In the first word section, we have first looks at Agatha All Along. Did you write that, Hellspells?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why you would think that I would.
I don't know why either. Seth Rogen is the pint of milk. I did a very funny line about that in Contents, by the way. I think you should check that out. Does anyone actually read the Contents
Absolutely
page?
Not.
I always did.
I fucking spent ages writing jokes. We talked to Isabella Merced from Alien Romulus in my section, the best sections, the final cut section. We talked to Peter Strickland. We talked to Griffin Dunn, who was in this very room just a minute ago, talking about his memoir. We rank the films of 2004, and we review lots of lovely movies as well. It is an absolute belter of an issue. One issue to rule them all, and in the darkness bind them. It is available right now. All good, evil, and virtual newsagents pay our wages.
That's enough.
You lovely people.
There you go.
You family affairs.
You family affairs. Yeah, this
is a good joke.
This could be. Oh, that's good. Because
there you go. Yeah, we'll get to it later.
This could be the first podcast. Like, we're recording in a general election, but this could be the first Empire podcast tomorrow, not under a Tory government. I'm not saying anything about that. I'm just making a statement of probable fact.
Oh, that's true. Wow. That's a weighty thought, actually. Mm-hmm. Wow, the sense of freedom. I mean, no sense at all, because we're not being political, but...
No. Oof. No, we're not being political.
Really makes a girl think.
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it? Yeah. Out of a frying pan into a similarly shaped frying pan, you might say. Anyway, anything else in the world of movie news that's
Dune!
Happening? Oh, Christ.
I know. It's not necessarily Dune,
it's absolutely Dune.
So, Denis Villeneuve will be releasing, in theory, an untitled Denis Villeneuve film for Warner Brothers in December 2026.
So why would that be Dune news?
Well, the scuttlebutt, Helen, the scuttlebutt is that they are fast-tracking Dune Messiah and they have pegged that date for said
Simon
film. Simon pegged that date. So it's not going to be the nuclear war film that he was talking about. It's not going to be Rendezvous with Rama. It is, in fact, going to be Dune Messiah, which does mean he's going straight back into the desert, which is not what he was planning to do.
No.
But I'm all for it.
Clearly it is what he's planning to do if he's doing it.
If he's doing it, it's clearly what he is. But it's not what he talked about wanting to do. When he spoke to us... For our Dune podcast.
Yes, but then they probably wheeled over an entire vat of spice to his house and said, you know, come on.
I should have asked my good friend Florence Pugh about this last week.
Pew, pew, pew. She dies in a hail of bullets
very early on in Dune Messiah. So, I mean, look, obviously I want there to be Dune Messiah, but I also kind of want him to come at that fully creatively charged. And if he does indeed feel like he needs something else first, I support that for him. Like, if he wants to make his own little Inception type thing before making The Dark Knight Rises, as it were, you know, I support that for him. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, I suppose it depends how quickly he could do a palate cleanser. Because there is a sense that, I mean, even if you're talking about December 2026, that's a decent-ish break, isn't it, between Dune Part 2. And this is very much Part 3 of a central story. And I wonder, realistically, from a financial point of view, how long you want to wait before you finish the story.
I get it. I think, and especially with a cast who is this much in demand and this, you know, so hot right now, basically, both literally because they're in the desert and also figuratively.
There are no ugly buglies in the cast of June.
There is no, actually, so double figuratively, they're so hot right now and they're also just so hot.
I mean, they're very hot. And then they also, they drink their own piss and shit.
And yet, still hot.
Still
Go
hot.
Figure.
Maybe that's the regime.
No, I know you're not allowed to drink soda anymore, but like soda, I don't know why.
29 days. 29 days.
Truly awe-inspiring.
It really is.
But please don't turn to drinking your own piss as a substitute.
Too late.
My point is...
Sorry, I'm way ahead of you there.
It's a prerequisite for yoga.
Yeah.
No, it is not. Who told you? You know what?
The doctor told me no fizzy drinks. Didn't say anything about not drinking my own piss.
I can't imagine why he or she would leave that out.
Yeah.
My point is, if he is ready, you know, creatively...
I agree.
...to make Dune Messiah fantastic, I wish him well of it. But, you know, I also want him to be...
Listen, he could do whatever he wants, right?
100%.
He could announce he's making Paul Blart Mall Cop 3, and you would absolutely be over the moon, because it would probably be...
it probably would be transcendent.
...at least one of the previous Paul Blart movies. But listen, I think Strike While the Iron is Hot, right? And if he's, you know, if he's had a little bit of a think about it, he's had a little bit of a holiday. I presume he's been on holiday, you know, after Dune Part 2 came out, and he's probably recharged the batteries, and he's like, yeah, you know what? I should maybe do that. But my understanding is, my understanding about Dune Messiah, right, is that it takes place a few years after Dune Part 2, so there would be an aging up thing, so... It would make sense for them to wait for Timmy Two Meats to become Timmy Three Meats and for Zendaya to look like she's actually aged a day.
Well, we don't have 50 years to wait
that,
so we'll have to leave that aside.
It also depends how he attacks the narrative, because, you know, he quite enjoys filling in those particular time jumps with actual stories. So, and we do leave it in kind of a very sort of fertile storytelling place. So,
why does there have to be a time jump?
Because new characters are introduced who have to, you know, exist.
Oh.
I refuse to answer on the grounds my answer may incriminate me.
All right. But if it doesn't, it might be this nuclear war movie, which is about how scary nuclear war is.
His scuttlebutt is that it is not, and his scuttlebutt is also that it isn't Rendezvous with Rama. But I don't know. I'm just saying, like, if he wanted to make something... that was an event movie, that was a Denis Villeneuve event movie, that was equivalent of something like Rendezvous with Rama or something else big and bold and exciting like that. That's a good thing. You know, we should all be cheering that along.
I mean,
if it, you know, as long as he then comes back and finishes Dune like we want him to.
But I'm like, you've started, so you should finish.
If
he needs a palate cleanser, go on holiday, spend a week in Ayanapa, do whatever you need to do, but come back. Get to work, get back in the desert.
James is the taskmaster. Wow, not the taskmaster.
Do you remember the whole essay about George R. R. Martin is not your bitch? I'm kind of feeling a little bit the same right now about Denis Villeneuve. I'm just saying.
Denis Villeneuve is not my bitch.
He is not your bitch.
That's fair. It's true.
As much as you would like him to be.
As much as I would. Can I ask a question? Because I remember nothing. Did we talk about Fantastic Four on last week's podcast?
In what context?
You know, that it's going to be a period piece and it's going to be on another Earth, you know, that stuff.
No, but that was assumed and expected anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is something Kevin Feige has teased on a podcast we won't mention.
Yeah.
And it's also something that makes sense given that drawing of them all, isn't it?
So. Yeah. Because it's clearly going to be period, and it's clearly going to be not the MCU's Earth, because that's where they've been living all this time. And then when Secret Wars happens, they'll all get thrown. They'll get thrown onto our planet, and then have to live with themselves. Because the Fantastic Four are so high profile, they could not have been around the 1960s because people would have mentioned them.
Exactly, because they're slebs.
Well, they're fantastic.
Wait, unless that's a derogatory term, and I should call them
movie stars.
Movie stars.
Yeah,
but they're not movie stars.
No, I know.
Helen's making another excellent reference to a film that we're going to be discussing later.
Yeah.
Oh, the jokes are flying fast.
Kind of. Anywho.
Next one's due next Tuesday.
Other really good news for James is that the Highlander reboot, the Henry Cavill starring Highlander reboot, is set to shoot in January 2025.
January.
According to, of course, Chad Stahelski. So, yay, frankly. There can be only many.
Well, let's start with one, and we'll take it from there.
I'm excited.
I too am excited. And speaking of exciting, I know you're going to be very up on this, Chris, but Inside Out 2 has become the first billion-dollar grosser.
$1 billion.
At the box office since, I believe, Barbie.
Yes, Helen, that is correct. I can't remember when we discussed the box office for the year. We made some predictions and some bold, wild swings a couple of weeks ago. We said that I think Despicable Me 4 would definitely make $1 billion. And I think we said there was a chance, if two other films had a chance at it, and it was Deadpool and Wolverine, and actually probably Joker as well, Joker 2, especially all that repeat business from Helen.
Well, we were talking about summer stuff. Yeah. So we left
and
out Joker.
Despicable Me 4, but I can't remember. We definitely said Inside Out 2 had a chance, but I don't know whether we actually nailed our colors to the mast and actually said it was going to make $1 billion.
I don't remember either.
But
I think we weren't saying what would make $1 billion. I think we were trying to rank the...
You were right.
Top films of the summer, so it was definitely in there in the mix. But
it has.
But yeah, fantastic news.
Stunned. It has exceeded beyond people's wildest expectations. It's passed $1 billion in 3 weeks. It's incredible.
It's amazing.
You know, it's probably going to finish up around 1.3, 1.4, something like that. And you know, it feels to me like the box office is finally having a bit of a shot in the arm. A Quiet Place Day One. Did pretty well, but $56 million opening weekend in the States last week.
Yeah, so it makes absolute sense that within a month it's going to be on streaming. So that's great.
In the States, we should say. But yeah. That's just stupid. That's stupid. Stop it. Stop it.
Yeah.
But it's great. And the Deadpool Wolverine apparently is tracking to be the biggest of the summer so far. And there's a chance it might have a $200 million opening weekend. They think, even this far out.
I mean, look, if it does, fantastic. I think we doubted its nailed-onness for $1 billion, given the performance of the Deadpools and the X-Men's previously. But, you know, they've been away long enough that people are missing them, and they've played a blinder of a publicity campaign. So,
they really have.
You know, who knows? It will definitely do very well. I'm excited to see it.
$200 million would seem to indicate that $1 billion is in reach, right?
Yeah.
It's very rare for a film to open to $200 billion. Are you okay? All right. It's usually him who's yawning.
I'm sorry, I'm not well.
Okay. It's very rare for a film to open to $200 billion worldwide and not eke it out to $1 billion. But then again, you never know.
You never do.
You never know. Is that 200? That's 200 million in the States. That's not just 200. And then that would be roughly 400 million if you doubled it
exactly
for worldwide. And then in that case, like, it's just plain sailing to $1 billion from there, right?
Pretty much.
You know? It's just a light saunter, a hop, skip, and a jump, an afternoon amble over to Billionville.
Delightful.
There we go. Anything else happening in the world of movie news? It's been a bit of a quiet week.
It's been a quiet one. I think it's been a Quiet Place Day One, really.
Oh, very good.
Oh, Totoro, My Neighbor Totoro, is getting a re-release this summer in the UK, which is very exciting for me.
Okay. There's a new Hellboy movie that nobody asked for.
Yeah.
Starring Jack Keezy as Hellboy. Listen, Mike Mignola, creator of Hellboy, says this is the most faithful, it's a direct adaptation of a Hellboy story, The Crooked Man, directed by Brian Taylor, who is one half of Neville Dean and Taylor.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not something I'm automatically going to dismiss, even though my tone and demeanor would suggest otherwise. But
every day is Christmas Eve.
Every day is Christmas Eve.
I didn't like the last Hellboy even
despite the
fact that I really like David Harbour generally.
Yeah.
And many other people involved, but I didn't like it as a film. So hopefully this will be better than that.
Yes, that is the dream. I mean, it's scraping the barrel of news, but George R.R. Martin kind of weirdly, vaguely alluded to the fact that Elden Ring, which was the game of 2022, and an expansion has just come out, which I reviewed for the magazine. It might be getting a film or TV adaptation. It's just another thing he's doing to procrastinate and not write the next Song of Ice and Fire book.
I mean, I know he isn't our bitch. However.
If he could be slightly our bitch. Yeah.
I was just reading Duncan Egg, actually. I got the Legends anthology where it was first published and was reading about Duncan Egg.
The first one, The Hedge Knight.
Yeah.
Mm.
Adorable.
You can get all three of those in Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, a little compendium book.
Mm, interesting.
But, yeah, they're really fun.
Yep. I've been going through the movie news here, and there is none.
Well, let us not look a gift horse in the mouth in terms of our time limits.
Yes,
let's move on.
Let's move on.
The next part of the podcast.
Yes, which is
of course
our guest.
Hooray!
Our guest this week, we only have one guest this week, and I think two guests next week. I can't remember. It's not like I booked them. The guest this week is Mia Goth, who is the star of Maxine, Ty West's Maxine, which is out this week, and it completes his trilogy. Are you okay, Jimbo? Bet you want Yom and Ratman is in here in a few seconds. Unbelievable. I'm the only person who hasn't yawned yet. Oh, God. Anyway, Ty West's horror trilogy, fantastic horror trilogy, really, really creatively ambitious horror trilogy that began a couple of years ago with X, moved into the prequel Pearl, which also starred Mia Goth. She plays a character called Maxine in X and an elderly lady called Pearl. Then Pearl was the prequel, which told the story of how a young Pearl came to be a psychotic killer. And now we pick up the story of Maxine just a few years on from X in Maxine, in which Maxine Minx is an adult film star, the star of Hundreds of Beavers, who's deciding to go straight, so to speak, with a role in a new horror film from a British director played by Elizabeth Debicki. But wouldn't you know it, on the streets of LA in 1985, there is also a serial killer who seems to be targeting Maxine and her friends. Dun, dun, dun. What is going on and can it be stopped? Those are just two of the questions asked in Maxine. Mia Goth in this franchise is a force of absolute nature, whether it's as Maxine or as Pearl. She's wonderful. I had a great time speaking to her the other day on Zoom, where she was in LA. So here we go. Mia Goth talking about Maxine. Do please enjoy. Delighted to be joined on the Emperor Podcast by the star of Maxine and Pearl and X, Mia Goth. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm excited to be talking to you.
I'm excited for you to be talking to me as well. So that's good. We're both excited. I have to say, this film is a blast. And for me, this is one of the most creatively ambitious trilogies in horror movie history. I mean, it's fascinating to me how this kind of evolved over, well, really only a couple of years, really. But what did you have an inkling of this at all in your first conversations with Ty about X? Because clearly it wasn't an accident that you were playing Pearl. So did you talk about potential for sequels, potential for spin-offs, potential for prequels when you had those first conversations?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, when I first spoke to Ty back in 2020, almost 5 years ago now,
wow.
We were having our Zoom chat, you know, just to discuss the movie X and just to discuss Maxine as a character, not even older Pearl. All of that came later. You know, once I had gotten the job and I was prepping for X, it was probably about 6 weeks into that he messaged me and told me that he had this idea for a prequel, and if, you know, we were going to go to New Zealand to shoot because of COVID, and it was the only place that was kind of essentially COVID-free at that time, then we might as well try and make another movie. And, you know, would you be down for that? Well, yeah, all right. And yeah, of course, why not? Sign me up, Ty West. And then he said, well, if we're going to do this, then I think you should help me write the script because you are older, Paul, and so, you know, your insight is really important. I said, yes, of course, that sounds amazing too. Sure, why not? And we just started writing, and I would send him stuff, and he asked me, he would ask me questions like what kinds of scenes have stuck with me and what are my favorite movies. And one of the movies that I brought up to him was Dancer in the Dark by Lars von Trier. And it's funny because that's really kind of what Pearl became. He said that one of his favorite movies is The Wizard of Oz. And really, Pearl is, if you think about it, if Pearl and The Wizard of Oz, if Dancer in the Dark and Wizard of Oz had a baby, it would be Pearl, you know? And we never really thought anyone was going to, we didn't really think about the results at all. It was just an amazing opportunity, and we worked really well together, and then the world responded in the way that it did, and then we were able to make a third movie. Now looking back on it, I see how much of, you know, there's a lot of Thai in Maxine. Yes. You know, none of this would have happened possible without Thai and his drive and his ambition and constantly, you know, trying to, you know, make things bigger and trying to get the most out of a situation. I mean, Thai is so incredibly ambitious, and I see a lot of Thai in Maxine.
Yeah. And what about yourself? How much of you is in Maxine?
Oh, a lot. A lot. When I first started making my first movie, I had just finished sixth form and I was going to go to university. And then I got my first movie, Nymphomaniac. And I had to make a decision as to whether I was going to go film Nymphomaniac or if I was going to go to school. And I obviously, it wasn't even a choice. I was going to go make the movie. And I went there to Germany and we filmed this movie, and it was the most incredible experience of my life. I loved every second of it. And I knew there and then that there was nothing else I wanted to do with my life. And I, you know, I knew that this was plan A and I couldn't have a plan B. Because if you have a plan B, you're already, you know, setting yourself up for failure. So it was plan A or you're fucked. And it's always been plan A. And that's kind of, it's worked out. And I see a lot of that there's a lot of that in Maxine too.
Absolutely. And it's fascinating in this as well, because obviously it's a few years on from the events of X, and she's a little bit more battle hardened, I think it's fair to say. But do you see her in some ways as still being essentially the same person she was in X? You know, when I went back and revisited X for this, it was fascinating that she says, you know, early on in that movie, I want the whole world to know my name. And that level of ambition carries on into Maxine, which I thought was really interesting. Despite everything she's been through, she still has that laser focus on being a big star.
Yeah, I think at her core, she's very much the same person. When X, you know, comes to an end, she's the lone survivor of this massacre that took place, and she gets into her car and she drives off into the sunrise. And whilst she didn't have a physical death, I think that, you know, she had to die a little bit. It was the only way that she was able to cope with the situation that took place on that farm, you know? So she really kind of creates a whole new identity for herself, and she, it's her coping mechanism. And she learned a lot that night. She sees how quickly life can be taken from you, and she realizes, you know, it's a sink or swim moment, and she's either gonna let that situation just completely bring her down, or she's just gonna keep moving forward. And I think she makes that decision in the car to just, you know, go to California, and, you know, life's too short, so just pursue your dreams, and nothing's gonna get in her way.
I read an interview with you in the run up to this movie that was headlined. And I'm quoting here, Mia Goth is ready to move on from being a scream queen. Now, at no point did you utter the word scream queen in that interview. So someone else wrote that headline, obviously. But that struck me because Maxine, not to give too much away, does no screaming in this movie. Like, she is a scream-free zone. She is absolutely in charge of the situation for the most part. Anyway, she's a survivor. And I imagine that was something that was really, really interesting for you to play. Like, she's completely not the type of person you would see usually anchoring a quote-unquote horror film. I guess in X, she's a little bit more of your traditional final girl, but here she's not that at all. And I thought that was really interesting. It must have been interesting for you to play.
Yeah.
She's so proactive as well.
Maxine is one of my favorite characters that I've ever had a chance to play. And you know, I think that the industry has a tendency to, you know, like to put you in boxes for whatever reason. And I've definitely experienced that and seen that happen firsthand. And, you know, in many ways, I don't even know if I would call Maxine a horror movie.
Yeah.
I think people will go into the cinema and be surprised. It's more of a thriller. And it's really fun too. When I first read the script, it just read to me like a party. And I think that ultimately that's kind of what we made too. It was felt like a victory lap when we were filming it, being like having access to all of these locations. And I think that translates too into the final movie. It feels like a party, and they've decided to release it next weekend on July 4th weekend. It all just, the music, the locations, it's just, yeah, I saw that headline too about, you know, wanting to, I don't know. I have a funny time talking about that because I've felt such warmth and embraced by the horror genre, you know, and I don't want to turn my back on that. I've really, you know, it's been cool to have my work respond to people in that way. I just want to try different things and like we all do. And that's how you continue to grow. And I just, you know, for this trilogy, I just don't know where else we could take it.
No, absolutely. And it's really funny as well, I should say that for people who haven't seen the film yet, it's tremendously funny. I don't know how you got through some of your scenes with Kevin Bacon without just corpsing.
Neither do I. He's also just been such a cool guy. And when I found out that he was coming onto the movie, I was so excited, and it was just the perfect fit. And I just love him, and he's so fantastic in the movie and just such a nice guy.
There's one, I don't want to give anything away about the film, but there is one amazing scene in terms of, you know, it being metatextual as well. There's a scene where Maxine has to go to get a head cast for this horror movie that she's in. And there's this extraordinary scene where, you know, you're slathered in goo. And there's a moment where that freaks her out, shall we say. And it struck me that must have been, maybe not the freaking out, but that's certainly something you went through to play Pearl, right? The head casting and the sense of claustrophobia and everything that goes with that. Is that the case? And what was that like for you, if so?
Well, I have done that quite a few times, actually. I did it for Old Pearl and X, and then I did it... I actually did a mold the week before we shot that scene. I went into a workshop here in LA, and I went and I took a mold for the film Blade. And when I was doing that, I stepped in, and I had a really bad experience that time around. And I think so much depends on, you know, your state and where you're at. And I know I was in the middle of filming Maxine, and we were doing lots of nights, and I was tired, and then we had to... So all of that has an effect on how you're able to process all of that coming, you know, being put on you. And I actually freaked out, and I had to take it off and had to go out for some air and have a cup of tea and, you know, center myself. And then we went back and did it again. And then, you know, once we got the mold and I, you know, went back into my car, I was like, wow, that's just like, that's great prep for that scene next week, because I know exactly what to do. And, you know, and sometimes it's great. Sometimes it feels like an embrace or like a hug. You can just sit there in your thoughts and just be calm. And then other times it's really tricky. But then I did it again, actually, for Frankenstein.
Yeah.
But the process is changing a little bit. And now I think they do it with a 3D computer. I'm not entirely sure how it happens. It's so quick, I don't even really remember it taking place, which is bittersweet. You know, it's a challenge to do it sometimes, but there's just something it's like holding a script, you know. It's just such an integral part of making a movie, and you know, I think you lose something by it by becoming all on computers and do you know what I mean?
We need to keep things old school. That's why I say technology is great. It can improve things, of course, but yeah, let's keep things old school. Let's cover our actors in goo. That's what I say. Well, Mia, I'm gonna let you go. I hope that we see the results of that head cast for Blade down the line. I hope that happens. I know we will see you in Guillermo's Frankenstein. Very excited about that as well. So you're working with other people and not just Ty West. So you have some time off for the time being.
Yeah, we're filming Frankenstein at the moment, and it's everything I hoped it would be and more. It's just been such an extraordinary experience. I love it. We just wrapped in Toronto, and we're heading to Scotland soon to shoot all the exteriors, which I'm really excited about.
Mia Goth, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much indeed.
Thank you.
All right, so that was Mia Goth. And let's talk about Maxine, because now it is time to talk about the movies that are out this week in your multiplex and in your Silverplex. And I'm looking at James, and he's looking a bit blank. And I'm looking at Helen, and she's looking a bit blank, which means that only I have seen Maxine.
I was sick. I'm sorry. Tell me about Maxine.
You can't party day and night with Coldplay and Janelle Monáe and your good friend, Cate Blanchett.
And I was in Vogue. Don't forget, I was in Vogue.
And you were in Vogue.
Just to be clear, I'm in the background of a photo of Florence Pugh, but I'm totally counting it.
Yeah, dying in a hail of bullets.
That's it. So tell me about Maxine. So this is a sort of direct sequel to X.
Weren't you listening?
With Pearl as the sort of outlier.
Yes. So this, basically what I said in the introduction to Mia Goth's interview. So this picks up 6 years later, 6 years after the events of X. And Maxine, you know, spoilers for X, the sole survivor of X, has moved on with her life, and she is now this adult film star. But she does not lack for ambition, does Maxine Minx, and she auditions for in the incredible opening scene of this movie. Well, not opening scene, but there's another scene. But anyway, in the first scene that we see her, she auditions for a horror film called The Puritan 2, directed by a British director played by Elizabeth Debicki, and she gets it. And then people start dying around her because there is a serial killer loose on the streets of Los Angeles who seems to have some knowledge about Maxine's prior involvement in the Texas porn star massacre. So there's a little bit of blackmail involved. Kevin Bacon. It's a big week for Kevin Bacon
big
being
week. Wow.
Really sleazy and villainous in movies. The EE stands for Everyone's Evil, I think, this week. And he is a sleazoid private detective who is involved in blackmailing Maxine. And there's an incredible cast. And here I mentioned Elizabeth Debicki. Lily Collins turns up briefly as well. Giancarlo Esposito is in the movie. Also, you have two cops who become very involved in investigating Maxine and her past, played by Bobby Cannavale and Michelle Monaghan. This is a really, really good cast.
Yeah.
And I love this movie. I think it's the best of the trilogy. X and Pearl are great, but there's such a confidence about what Ty West is doing here. It's such a great evocation of the era. He's saying some really interesting things about ambition and stardom and the things that you have to do. As Sean Connery says with his dying breath in The Untouchables, what are you prepared to do to become a star in this case? And it's really great. It's really funny. It's not a horror film, I would say.
Oh, okay.
People die. And people die horribly at times. But I wouldn't call it a horror film. I'd call it a Brian De Palma-esque, not even sexy, but a Brian De Palma-esque, voyeuristic, nightmarish thriller with an incredible incendiary lead performance from Mia Goth.
Is that leaning into the era again? You
know, very much
so. The De Palma kind
of
glory
much so. It is drenched in neon, this movie, but it, the scope is different from X and Pearl. The budget is bigger. This will make a really, really interesting trilogy to watch when all is said and done. Yeah, I had a real blast with it. It maybe doesn't quite stick the landing entirely. The last 20 minutes is gonzo and batshit insane, but perhaps, I don't know, people might have wanted to go in a slightly different direction. But Listen, we'll discuss all of that in a spoiler special, because we will be doing one about Ty West this week for the spoiler podcast. So lots of things to get our teeth into with that one. We gave us four stars then for Maxine, and my word, folks, it's a belter. I mean, this is, Ty West is a fantastic director, and these films together, because he didn't intend it for it to be a trilogy. Pearl was quite opportunistic because Mia Goth was playing Pearl in old age makeup, and they three were like, well, let's
do this.
We're in the pandemic. We're down in New Zealand. Can we make a second movie? And then they made Pearl.
Sweet.
With David Corenswet.
Yes, indeed.
Indeed.
The new super.
Yeah, he's on set. Being lots of paps are shooting him and various other heroes.
Well, they won't be able to shoot him because he's faster than a speeding bullet.
Correct. True. Correct. Four stars then from Maxine. That is in cinemas right now. On Netflix right now, speaking of Kevin Bacon, is Beverly Hills Cop Axel F, in which Eddie Murphy plays Axel Foley, 40 years after the original movie. You'll never guess, something happens in Los Angeles that means that he has to come back from Detroit to investigate another crime. and inject his fast-talking smoothness into the Beverly Hills scene. But it's not quite as easy as that, because this time he has a daughter, an estranged daughter, played by Taylor Page, and they have a very interesting relationship as they try and track down and figure out who could possibly be the evil bad guy behind it all.
Anyway, Kevin Bacon's also
in the
incredibly
film.
Kevin Bacon,
completely coincidentally, and in no way related to that.
It's like whenever watching Bad Boys Ride or Die, which is another Jerry Bruckheimer movie, produced movie that came out this summer. And you're going, I wonder who the bad guy is, and then Ewan Griffith's name pops up in the credits. And going, the second and Kevin Bacon appears in this movie's credits right at the beginning. You're going, well, that's it. None more evil.
In fairness, it's not even a spoiler, because they don't even attempt to hide the fact.
No, they don't.
In that first scene, he's being so overtly villainous when he introduces himself.
I genuinely thought that Axel was going to come out of the scene going, that motherfucker's the bad guy. Isn't he the bad guy?
Yeah.
So Jimbo, do you want to take this one?
Sure, why not? So this is Mark Molloy's film. It is a film that is aware of what it is and where it came from. There is a scene in this, it's in the trailer, it's not a spoiler, where Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who also plays a Beverly Hills police officer, is talking to Axel Foley and going through his, shall we say, his recent visits or his historic visits to Beverly Hills. And he was like, you were back here in this year. And then, you were back in 94, not your finest hour. And it's like, chuckles, because Beverly Hills Cop 3 wasn't very good. And that's a really risky thing to do when you're making a film, because you've got to make damn sure your film is good before you start poking fun at the one that isn't good. And the one thing I will say is this is better than Beverly Hills Cop 3. So it at least has that going for it. And Eddie Murphy is fun in it. I think he re-engages with the classic Axel Foley shtick, but he doesn't try to completely emulate it.
Not the laugh.
No, that's right. He doesn't do the
laugh.
I hadn't plot that, but you are absolutely right. But that's the Eddie Murphy laugh, isn't it? That's not the Axel Foley laugh.
But it's both.
Yeah, it's the Eddie Murphy laugh. Clearly, Eddie did not find this film remotely funny, because he does not laugh at any point.
He does. Axel laughs loads in this movie, but he doesn't do the laugh.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think that's because Eddie, as a person, has changed his laugh?
Quite possibly.
Do you think he did it, like, was it peer pressure?
The laugh.
Yeah, no, he doesn't do that at all.
He doesn't do it.
Maybe Eddie just doesn't laugh that way. Maybe just life isn't funny.
I'm doing a spoiler special interview with Mark Molloy immediately
after
this podcast. I hadn't even occurred to me, but I'm going to ask him.
You must ask him, because I need to know this. So apart from Eddie not finding it funny, I would say that he does, it's an evolution of the character. So he's clearly older, he's clearly different. There's lots of, I'm too old for this shit stuff in there. But he still, frankly, he looks incredible for his age. But he's still the same kind of fast-talking, play it very loose with the rules. Lots of voices, lots of funny characters. Though, again, there are references to, oh my God, I just don't have the energy to keep doing this shit. And it's quite fun, and I think it's enjoyable spending time with that character. And yes, he's coming back for spurious reasons. I like the fact that Paul Reiser's back as Jeffrey. I like the fact that Jeffrey's
really
career
him.
has done quite well. Taggart's in it. Rosewood's obviously getting himself into trouble.
Just been a
murder. Not that Taggart. But, the gang is back together, which is quite fun. I think the main thing that disappointed me with this is that what works so well about Beverly Hills Cop is it comes from that very specific 80s stable, at 48 Hours, that Eddie Murphy did a lot of, where it is primarily action, primarily thriller-driven, but has a thread of proper comedy in it. And I think in this, it doesn't really work as a thriller. Obviously, because you have a secret bad guy who you give away in one of the first scenes. That's not ideal. But also,
the bad guy was not a mystery in the first film either.
Very
so.
True. Very, but he's no Victor Maitland. Like,
I think Victor Maitland's a bad...
Don't you come for Victor Maitland.
I'm going to come for him.
Okay, we have no time.
We have no time. We have absolutely no time. So I don't think the thriller particularly works. I don't think the plot is interesting enough. It's kind of slightly rambling, and it doesn't really do anything from a thriller point of view. And it's good company, and it's gently amusing. It's never really laugh out loud funny. But I think what this did do for me... I didn't think it was funny at all. But what I did think is it reminded me why I loved Eddie Murphy so much in the 80s. Even if this was more of an echo of that, is that he, since the 80s, has moved into full-on silly comedy, and he's done that a lot. Whereas here, he goes back to slightly walking that dramatic comedy line, which is why I always thought his strengths were. So there were moments of this where I thought, this has the gem, it has the potential to be something much better than it is. but there's something here. And this could have been a hateful film. Like, it would have been very easy, because Coming to America was dreadful. So
it wasn't dreadful.
It was dreadful. So this is much better than that.
This is much better than Coming to America. There's no question.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had told me your reaction to this movie before I saw it. And I didn't see it until it actually hit Netflix yesterday.
Yeah.
And I sat down last night with my wife and we watched it and had a rare old time, I have to say. I think it is laugh out loud funny because I laughed out loud a number of times. I think there's a great gag. I think one of the real shames about this movie is that it is on Netflix and it's not being given a proper theatrical release, because there's a really funny gag earlier on in a chase, as a chase begins. There's a great side gag that I just, as I watched it, I was like, I wish I could see this with an audience, because they would have just eaten the shit up.
As long as that audience wasn't me, because I'd have just been stony-faced staring at the screen.
But that's the way of you.
Well, I had a blast with this one. I think it's really interesting. I wasn't planning to do a spoiler special on this until I saw it, and now we are, because I think there's lots of stuff to talk about with Mark Molloy, the director. I think Eddie Murphy, there's really interesting riffs on his personality and on the persona of Axel. There's like a running gag where Axel, you're talking about this, you know, I'm too old for this shit business. But there's this kind of running gag throughout the thing where Axel is not at full strength. He is not, his powers are weakening slightly. So the ability that he had in Beverly Hills, the first two, the only two Beverly Hills Cop movies to exist before this, he would go into a room and he would dominate someone with the power of his personality and his fast talking patter, and he would be speaking so fast that he would just wear them down, and he would confuse them, and he'd make them think that he's someone from the municipal council or whatever, and they
Rolling Stone magazine in town to interview Michael Jackson.
Precisely.
Michael Jackson is on top of the world.
They would just hand over the hotel suite to him, and that doesn't happen in this movie.
No.
He tries it a number of times.
And fails
a number of times.
That's really
interesting.
But to be fair, I would say I really, really dreaded this film. I thought it would be awful, and I was pleasantly surprised.
I was very pleasantly surprised. I had a good time with it. And yeah, I kind of think it might be up there with Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Mm-hmm. Damning with reasonably faint praise.
Also, it looks really good. I saw someone on Twitter saying yesterday that it looks like shit. It doesn't look like
doesn't
shit.
Doesn't look like shit.
This film is like, this is a good Jerry Bruckheimer summer, and yeah. This and Bad Boys Ride or Die. Because I'm fed up of this nonsense that people say on Twitter all the time, that movies that are made these days look terrible, and then they show a clip of something from In the Line of Fire from 30 years ago. Look how great that movie looks compared to what it is now, because the people who are doing cinematography don't know what they're doing. Wrong. They do, and it looks great.
Beverly Hills Cop Them, which we gave 3 stars to.
Three stars.
Might be a touch generous, but I'll go with it.
3 stars then. All right, we do not have a lot of time because I have to run home to do Mark Molloy. So Helen, tell us about Unicorns, please.
So this comes from Sally El-Husseini and James Krishna Floyd. They are co-directing. James also wrote this. He also wrote The Swimmers, which she directed last time. It was a big hit on Netflix about the refugees who became Olympians.
Yeah, good film.
So this is a really interesting film. It stars Ben Hardy as Luke, who is a single father. He's a mechanic. He works in just a garage in Essex. And he's out one night. He ends up in this club, basically when he takes a wrong turn looking for the toilets in a restaurant, and sees this incredible person performing. They kind of have a spark. They get chatting. They, you know, there's a little bit of chemistry there. This is Aisha, played by Jason Patel, and then Luke discovers that Aisha is a drag queen, is a performer, and has to essentially deal with all of these feelings that he has, because he is at least a sensibly straight man, and is now sort of like doesn't really know how to deal with this. And they end up having to kind of work together because, you know, he needs a bit of extra money to take his daughter to Disneyland. And Aisha needs somebody to drive around and get to clubs and get to more gigs and stuff. So they end up kind of, you know, making this kind of connection and working together. Mm. And it is a kind of a love story from then on. So obviously there are forces that both internal and external that combine to kind of keep these two characters apart. There's a lot of really interesting examination of what is, I believe, referred to as the gay Asian sort of world in which Aisha lives and operates, and some of the forces that, you know, have kind of shaped his life or her life. But it's really just kind of an examination of getting past all of these labels, getting past all of these boxes, and forming a connection with another human being. I will say there are moments of quite shocking violence in this. One in particular that I did not see coming, but but yeah, I mean, I think that that is all to the good. I thought I knew the ways that this film was going to push my buttons and was going to kind of make me think about things, and it actually comes at things eventually in a different direction as well, which was really, really clever. I think it's really well made. It's beautifully shot. You've got the sort of neon glitter of Aisha's world and then this, you know, quite drab, almost blue-flooded Essex world, and then the two kind of begin to come together a bit and kind of meet in the middle. So kind of the look of the film really reflects the character's mental state, which I really enjoyed. And I think both performances are fantastic, both lead performances. Ben Hardy is very good, and Jason Patel was a total revelation to me in this. Absolutely fantastic performance. And okay, yes, I met him also at Black Glastonbury last weekend.
Wow.
But let's not, genuinely, before that, I was like, this is an incredible turn.
In the pocket of big unicorns, in the pocket of big Peg, in the pocket of big Kate Blanchett. Oh my God.
I'm so sorry.
What happened to your integrity, Helen O'Hara?
Look, that's why I declared it. Integrity is why I declared it.
Unbelievable.
But I genuinely, it was a film that surprised me in pleasant ways. So we give it 3 stars.
Cool.
Which is a recommendation.
Okay then, 3 stars for unicorns, folks. 3 stars for unicorns. And if you're wondering why, Chris, you sound different, well, I do sound different because it is actually now Friday morning. We had a lock-in in the podcast booth last night. No, of course we didn't. We did have to wrap up the pod immediately after the unicorns review last night, folks. So, or yesterday, I'm really confused. For a number of reasons, James was doing an episode of Pilot with Rap Man. I had to get home to interview the director of Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F. So we decided to reconvene in the morning, remotely. In the morning, which we have done. Jimbo isn't here, but Helen is here. Hello, Helen.
Hello.
Hello. And you have to run away as quickly, don't you? You've got to go somewhere.
Yes, not literally for once, like figuratively. I'm going off to Oxford to do a thing. So,
oh,
yes.
How nice. How lovely. But a lot has changed in the last 12 hours or so since we were recording the podcast in the studio. For one, it's raining. It was sunny yesterday, but now it's raining. There's big changes there.
Yes.
I also saw...
That's the big change.
That is the big change. I also saw last night Whiplash in concert at the Barbican, which was amazing. Genuinely one of the greatest things I've ever seen, with an incredible jazz orchestra playing amazing. Live. And the drummer, André Charlier, I think his name is, absolutely nailed the finale. Genuinely one of the greatest things I have ever seen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Immediate standing ovation once it ended. It was great.
So he neither rushed nor dragged.
Honestly, I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell. But then again, I don't think Fletcher can tell in that movie either. I think he's just fucking with Miles Teller or Odometer, as he should be called. But I know you don't particularly like the movie that much.
I like that one. I don't hate that one. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
I don't. It's not like top 10 of all time, like some people, but I like it. Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't think it's quite my top 10 either, but I think certainly that ending is in the top 10 endings of all time. It's absolutely incredible. But what else has changed over the night?
There was some regime changey stuff, I guess.
Regime change? Oh, yes, that's right. There was a big change, as we said in the podcast yesterday. And, you know, we're not making any declarations here politically. We're not nailing our political flags to political masts in any way, shape, or form. But there was a change of government overnight. So this is the first podcast segment recorded under a Labour government.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's
historic.
Something. It is historic. But enough politics for one show. We have one more film to talk about, folks. There is an action film out this week from India called Kill, which I have not yet seen, but which I hear is really, really great. And we gave it 4 stars. I'm hoping to see it this weekend so we can review it on next week's show. We're still waiting for Jimbo to show up. So, you know, Helen, let's have a little bit more small talk. What did you do last night?
I worked. It was very unfun, actually, yeah.
Anything good? What were you working on?
It's a very fun subject. It's just, you know, actually having to do the work was unfun.
So. Well, why don't you just chat GPT like everyone else does these days? I know I do.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. You're a monster.
Yeah, you know, you just say, hey, ChatGPT, why don't you do a feature in the style of, you know, just choose a writer that you admire.
Do it in the style of Lee Child.
Well, no, I was thinking more Chris Hewitt.
Oh, okay.
You know.
And what, then the one from Minneapolis?
No, I'm thinking me specifically. You go, hey, ChatGPT, can you do this in the style of Chris Hewitt? And ChatGPT malfunctions because it goes, I can't even possibly hope to achieve that level of genius. You've got to have to do it yourself. So that's what happened. I should say that we do not chat GPT anything under any circumstances whatsoever, in case people get the wrong end of the stick. So Jimbo's still not here, Helen, but let's talk about one more film, which is a film that James claims was once called Motherfucker. Hmm. Now, is that the case? And this is a film we should say is called A Family Affair on Netflix. So what's the skinny here?
Yeah, I don't know if it literally was, or like it could have been a name attached to a spec script or something, or if that's just what people on the internet joked it was called. I'll be honest, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, but it's about Zac Efron fucking Joey King's mother, Nicole Kidman, right?
Yes, exactly. No, the film's original title was apparently Motherfucker.
Okay, so this is true then.
Yeah.
Oh, Jimbo's here.
Jimbo is here. Hello.
Now, Jimbo, we were just explaining that A Family Affair was originally called Motherfucker, which you had told me, but I thought that was a joke.
No.
Okay.
No. Well, that's literally the name of the film.
It's literally the name of the film. Right, excellent. Hell's Bells, tell us about the movie, please.
Yeah, so this stars Joey King as Zara, who is an assistant to a Hollywood star called Chris Cole, played by Zac Efron. And, you know, it's the usual downtrodden Hollywood assistant type. He is, of course, an egotistical monster. And then he meets Zara's mum, Brooke, who is a writer. She's played by Nicole Kidman. She's like a serious, proper writer who also seems to be wealthy enough to have like a cliff house in like Malibu or similar. And they really strike it off. So then essentially it's another one of these slight age gap romances, about what, 16 years between the two on in this telling, with Zara in the middle, with Joey King's character in the middle, absolutely horrified that her mother would consider dating this awful man, essentially.
Yeah. Is it any good?
I didn't hate it. There's some funny scenes in here. We alluded to it earlier, but there's a very funny line where, you know, Chris claims that it's derogatory to call a movie star a celeb. You know, that's a funny notion. There are little bits like that that work. I think Nicole Kidman is really good at comedy and I like her in comedy. I just find it a really strange film because, you know, if your mum is super rich, which she clearly is, I'm sorry, she's very, very rich, it kind of takes the stakes away for Zara's character. Like, if she gets fired by Chris, which seems possible at the beginning of the film, we don't care. She'll be fine. You know, she's not struggling to make ends meet like most Hollywood assistants are. So it's kind of a bit, what are the stakes here? Why do I care? Everybody seems fine.
Okay.
Now, I guess, you know, Chris does improve as the film goes on. He becomes a slightly better person. We see another side of him.
I don't believe that Chris can become a slightly better person, but okay.
Well, Chris, dare to dream, really. But but I just, I didn't mind anything that was happening, but I also wasn't engaged in it, I think is where I'm coming from, you know? It just felt like you all seem like you have nice lives anyway. So who cares?
I see. Well, this was directed by Richard LeGravenese, which I think I'm pronouncing right. And he wrote The Fisher King. And that absolutely stunned me that he is directing this. So perhaps he had different intentions at one point. Who knows? But Jimbo, did this work for you? Was it a case of yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker? Or did you not like it?
I don't know. I kind of feel like the most interesting thing about this film was its title, and then they changed it to what can only be described as the most generic title possible, ensuring that this film will be forgotten within 2 weeks. In fact, I've already forgotten what the title of this film is because it's so generic. Whereas if it was called Motherfucker, it would live long in the memory. And I just think there's nothing really about this that stands out. It's not hugely funny. It's not particularly well-written. It's not hugely interesting. The performances, as Helen said, are really good. Joey King is a lot of fun in it. Nicole Kidman, it's obviously Nicole Kidman. I've got a lot of time for Zac Efron. I quite like the fact that it's a Paperboy reunion, although slightly less icky. You know, there's some fun stuff here. But then, you know, when you get into this, when you sort of dig into it, it's actually quite interesting because, you know, as you say, it is directed by Richard LeGravenese and it's based on Joey King's character in this, like, is based on Pamela Abdi from Warner Brothers. And obviously, she was a friend of LeGravenese. And so it's all, I mean, so there's a grain of truth to this. So there's an honesty to it somewhere. But I don't think that comes out in the film. Like, it feels incredibly, you know, fake and top level. And I just think Motherfucker is a film, like, as a title, that's a film that has edge. It has an interesting script. It has some good stuff in there. I think that's the point, isn't it?
Like, if it was called Motherfucker, it would have to be an edgier film. It would have to be a funnier, wilder, crazier film. It wouldn't be the sort of middle-aged Nicole Kidman female audience that this film seems to think is out there wanting to watch this movie. You know, the people who have already watched The Idea of You a couple of months ago and are now going to watch this. So it just, again, you're right, it seems like it's pulled between two different ideas and it can't really settle on either of them.
Yeah.
But Pamela Abdi used to be Danny DeVito's assistant. So what I want to know is, what is the true story that inspired this? Because,
oh my God, I want to see that film. Oh my word. Anyway, as Jimbo said, if you want to see a film in which Zac Efron lusts after Nicole Kidman, go and see The Paperboy instead, folks. It's absolutely fucking bonkers. Maybe give this one a swerve, although it is on Netflix. So if you've watched Axel F and you fancy watching something else, maybe you'll watch that. But anyway, two stars then for A Family Affair. That's a title even more generic than The Idea of You. What the hell is going on, guys? Anyway, on that note, on that very, very tired and sleepy note, that is it for this week's Empire Podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun, when we'll be joined by Micah Munro, star of the incredibly creepy new horror film Long Legs, and Griffin Dunn, who was in the seat that Helen was in yesterday. Not the seat that Helen's in now, she's in her living room. It would be weird if Griffin Dunn was there. Now, he's going to be talking about his memoir, his new memoir, The Friday Afternoon Club, A Family Memoir. So two absolutely cracking guests next week. But until then, until we meet again, until that auspicious occasion, it is time to say goodbye to my two colleagues of such lethal cunning, at least one of whom is almost certainly naked from the waist down. Goodbye, James Dyer.
Always.
Yeah, it's very disconcerting. Thank God we do it behind a desk. The podcast that is, not anything else. Anyway, goodbye, Helen O'Hara.
Toodaloo. Oh my God.
What? Anyway, we're starting this new regime as we mean to go on. And as ever, folks, it is also goodbye from me. And what I usually do at this point is I usually leave you with a pithy message, a bit of a gag or something like that. But a lot has changed overnight. The leader, in whom we all put so much trust and faith over the years, has gone. And however you feel about the blues, or the reds, or the yellows, or the greens, or the lighter blues, in fact, we must all now get behind the new man in charge. He will face challenges hitherto undreamt of over the next 5 years, but I know that with hard work, the support of the people, and a little bit of luck, Arne Slot will succeed as Liverpool manager. Although, as Mo Salah gets older, he may face an increasing right-wing problem. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time. Ding dong, the witch is dead. Bye.